Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, and welcome to the K Thompson Live Show. I am one of the co-hosts, also known as the Son, Eric Payne, and we also have our other co-host, Mr. Wayne Gilman, is here, I believe. Hello, Wayne.
Good evening, Eric. How you doing? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I can hear you just fine. Thank you very much. And we're going to have my mom joining us in a minute. Today is the 4th of January. What is it, the 4th of January, I believe, or the 5th? And January 4th, we got the Trump countdown to coming of the president, the new president. What do you think about that? We also have our host, Kay Thompson. There's my mind so far.
Yeah, doing fine. Waiting for, the clouds that were ruining our, getting on the air to disappear, but now we're on, so let's go, I think Wayne Gilman is going to be calling in.
Wayne's already on.
Oh, hey, Wayne,
how are you doing?
I'm already
here.
Okay,
It's fine.
And, we're going to be talking to Larry Hazard tonight, who is the New Jersey Boxing Commissioner, and he has a lot to talk about. So, we're going to be getting with him. As soon as he calls in, Wayne.
So we're going to just like we always like to do, the top of the story, top of the hour. We like to talk about the issues, the current issues that are going on, things that are going on in the news before we jump off into our special stories. What we're just talking about, the Donald Trump is going to be in office pretty soon. Just his whole style of things going on, of how to communicate with the public is just a special thing. What do you think about that, Wayne?
Well, we've talked about this almost, not even almost, beyond a year now, and right. I'm not happy, but I'm trying to go through the process that every American should try to do, and give this person a chance. In spite of my problems with his whole platform, the people that he's already considered for, positions in his cabinet, it speaks volumes. The fact that there's so much disgust, and again, it depends on who you talk to. I was in contact with someone who works in the tax arena, a prominent accountant, and sometimes when you speak to people who tend to support him, everybody has their own reasons, and it's just hard sometimes to swallow what the opposing party is considering, but at the same time, I have to say that, I'm going to go with Jesse Jackson's quote of keeping hope alive and making sure we have to be as registered Democrats and proud Democrats to maintain a certain amount of surveillance, which, for lack of a better word, on everything this administration does. Those people who are in the news business have even more of a challenge now to separate the fake news from the real news, and to also to present what would be considered, not to quote one of the networks I hate watching, Fair and Balance, but an objective point of view as to what is going on. And that's it.
Right.
But, I'm fastening my seatbelt, Eric and Kay. I just hope, because I know we're going to be in for some turbulence before the 4 years are over.
Yeah, and I was talking about in particular, you know, the latest round of things going on, obviously, on Capitol Hill today, and since the new Congress just took office yesterday, their attempts at the whole ethics, trying to gut the ethics committee, or the ability of that entity to investigate the ethics organization, and how he, in one of his tweets, let them know there's more important things to concentrate on, but it's interesting. I mean, you know, when you try to step back and look at a pattern that might be emerging, one of their attempts is to gut the ethics agency of its teeth. Interestingly enough, we have a president who's coming in whose ethics is an issue, right? I mean, his whole siding with Russia in this kind of hacking scandal that is where he basically encouraged espionage against the country, which should be somewhere along the lines of treason. Then still maintains the line, is holding the line that we don't know if it's definitely Russia, and it could be anybody, could be some fat person somewhere. It's almost as if, and this is at least what I've been thinking, it's almost as if that Trump is trying, like an accomplice to a crime, and he's trying to put people off the trail. You know, he's trying to put the cops off the trail of what's going on with the with, you know, of being able to find out the truth. You know, I mean, his comments about after the intelligence agencies are all pointing towards finding evidence that Russia had involvement in hacking and trying to influence the election, his constant attempts at attacking everybody that presents that concept is really interesting. It's almost like, you know, he's trying to spread misinformation. Obviously, it's spread his information, you know. That's why he only uses the Twitter. You know, they made a comment, the issue this week about he's supposed to have a press conference, right? Still hasn't happened.
Yeah.
Let people know this stuff. So, I mean, this is a guy doesn't want to be challenged with anything. And obviously the moves that the Republicans are trying to make, you know, they're trying to repeal the Obamacare and talking about there's certain parts of it that they're going to keep that's still good. But it's got to be worked. It's kind of like, well, I thought you want to repeal it and replace it, but you want to keep certain parts of it, so it's kind of good, right? Initially, there are good parts of it. And also the interesting thing about the Republicans is they claim they have a number of plans to replace it. They just haven't decided on one or worked out the kinks. So my question would be, or my notion, that the thing that comes to mind for me is like, well, if you have so many different plans, then why don't you guys at least put forth one or two or three and say, we got a bunch of them. Here's two or three that are in the works. They're not finalized, but just to let people know that we're backing up what we're saying. So, but that tells you that, you know, no progress, no plan. We still need time. You had 6 years. You've been complaining about Obamacare for 6 years. You guys don't have a plan other than there's good parts of the one that's already existing that you want to keep. I mean, it's time now for us to have this populace. They got to smarten up a little bit. I said this before. People got to get a little bit more intelligent. They got to get past their racism and stuff so ignorantly prejudiced against people that you're doing idiotic stuff and making idiotic decisions that affect the country as a whole. You know, I mean, and if you're not going to really bet your vote your interest, clearly, just the fact that this guy says he can do it should not be enough. You should look at his track record and how he does things with the workers. But, you know, this country can't afford the ignorance of prejudice and racism anymore. You know, we can't afford those type of people to really affect the direction of the, like I said, the country as a whole and how it affects everybody and how it affects our standing in the world. Because, you know, if you have this kind of ignorant mentality that you're superior over, and we have to get people to get rid of that mindset of being superior over anybody, because that puts us all in jeopardy. Because, you know, there's people that's willing to, just as long as they take you out, they don't mind dying, you know. And we, as a nation, we got this issue with terrorists trying to come at us. Maybe our old kind of way of doing things, America's modus operandi and standard operating procedure for 300-400 years needs to be rethought, at least, you know. And that whole issue of America being supreme over everybody and the approach I'm not going to be politically correct, of kind of a white supremacist perspective in terms of foreign policy and policies in dealing with nations around the world. You know, maybe you need to rethink that, especially in terms of when you're dealing with other people all over the world and people just turn around and say, we hate America. you know. And so you have people that are of diverse background, of the very people that I guess the racists hate, but still live in America, but got to worry about the terrorists that want to take out all Americans because there's a certain group of Americans that thinks everybody else that doesn't look like them is inferior. So, you know, that whole concept doesn't work well for us. It has been working well, okay? So, I mean, it really needs to be rethought. The world we need to get our populace on the average to be a little bit more intelligent, you know, and a little bit more educated, okay? So that's my perspective.
I don't mean to cut you off, Eric, but how do you achieve that when at the very top there's mediocrity?
Right, or they promote mediocrity. I just want to get our guest in. We got Larry Hazard on the line, but I know that he's got some thoughts. He's a boxing commissioner in New Jersey, and we usually talk sports, but I know he also has some interesting perspectives just about the politics and life in general. He's had some dealings, personal dealings, particularly with his area of dealing with boxing and being the boxing commissioner. He's had some personal dealings with Donald Trump.
I'm okay. How you doing?
All right. This is Eric.
I'm doing fine.
Eric,
Happy New Year. Happy New Year to
everybody.
Happy New Year to you, sir.
So what do you think? I just want to get your opinion first. I know you've had some dealings with Donald Trump, Mr. Hazard. So you think he's a better kind of hotel owner? And let me put it this way. You think you prefer him as hotel owner and just general rich guy as opposed to being president?
Yeah, I think that his expertise, you know, as a hotel and casino mogul, is unquestioned, especially in my business in boxing. He was quite helpful to the boxing industry when he was in Atlantic City for those years, especially during the 1980s and 90s, for as long as he was there. As a matter of fact, most if not all of the major boxing events, and those including Mike Tyson and all of the premier fighters of that era, it was Donald Trump who actually went out and bid for those fights. And thank God that he had the overblown ego that he has, because he got great pleasure in outbidding, you know, many of his other counterparts from casino industries in Las Vegas and some of the other areas, you know. And so we made out very well, you know, when Donald was in Atlantic City. As a politician, you know, I prefer him. I prefer him more as a casino operator than as a politician. I think he, you know, I think he's kind of overstepping his boundaries now. And to me, he's a little bit in over his head. You know, my feelings about Donald Trump, I really don't, you know, as crazy as it may sound, I really don't think that Trump really wanted to be president. You know,
yeah.
I think that his ego is, you know, he has this overblown. I mean, he's in a class by himself when it comes he's egomaniacal when it comes to things that he wants, and he just feels that if he wants it, he should have it. And I think that, you know, he started out with this presidency not really wanting to be president, but just something else to do. And as time went on, you know what I mean? The more he's challenged, the more that feeds into his ego, and then, you know, he goes after things even harder that way. And he ended up, you know, he ended up being president, not so much, in my opinion, not so much because of his knowledge and people recognizing that he is something that the country needed, but I think it was because people just didn't like Hillary Clinton. You know, a lot of people just didn't like Hillary, you know, and it's amazing how that played into this. But that's just my personal opinion, you know. You know, I'm not a politician, you know. But.
Yeah. But you know, Larry, I never thought. I thought all along that he really did not want to be president. I really did.
No, I didn't think that he wanted. You know.
Yeah.
I thought he was approaching it like a game. You know. You know he.
Exactly.
This guy, and you know, I'm just going to say this from a personal perspective of my dealings with him. You know, in Atlantic City, and I had a lot of dealings with him, being the, you know, boxing commissioner. You know, we got along very well. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We got along very well, and he got along very well with the major boxing promoters. He was a friend of boxing. He definitely was, and he used to come in and sit next to me at all of the big fights. Who's going to win this fight, Larry? You know, I became his prognosticator. I used to kid him. I used to say, gee whiz, Donald. I says, I'm telling you, you know, just from my knowledge and background, who's going to win? And I usually always used to end up pretty much right. I said, well, you should have laid down some money for me in Vegas, you know, so you bring me up in life. You know, I used to laugh and kid with the guy, you know. And we got along very well. You know, we got along very well. You know, anytime
I
would call him, you know, we were on a first name basis. Anytime I'd call him, he would call me back, you know. So, you know, it is what it is, you know.
Yeah. You know, Larry, when I first heard he wanted to be president, I said, he's got to be kidding. And I really think that he wasn't serious. I think that he just threw this out because, you know, he had a lot of money. And this would blow over. And lo and behold, now he's running. He's running for the presidency. He is the president. So he's saying, what do I do now? You know, I'm really up against it. I'm in deep doo-doo. What do I do? So it's now become like a joke, except that it's a serious joke. So I don't know what's going to be happening, but it's gotten to be a little bit for the board over everything. I don't know. I've never heard anything like this before.
I don't mind Donald Trump. Go ahead, Wayne.
You know, I just had a quick question for Larry. I noticed that Donald Trump has retained a close relationship with Don King, and I wanted you to speak to that.
Well, you know, him and Don King, I was a bit surprised to see, you know, Don King. You know, involved at the level that he appears to be involved, you know, and that I really don't know as to what level and what role, if any, he's attempting to play in this presidency. You know, Don King is 85 years old now. He's 85. And
he doesn't look it. I have to say that much.
No, he's still very lively. He's still very sharp, you know, mentally, you know, and you know he's quite a guy, Don King, and there's really nothing that I could imagine that at this point in Don King's life that he would want, you know, politically. From Donald Trump, you know, Don King certainly is nobody has to pass a hat around for him, you know, in terms of finances. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you
and
know,
he's
thing,
done,
Trump,
he's,
Trump needed
him, him and Donald Trump, both of those Donalds, they had a very good relationship, you know, in boxing. Don King. Made a lot of money from Donald Trump with some of those enormous site fees that Donald Trump paid for some of those major fights that you saw in Atlantic City, especially those Mike Tyson, those multi-million dollar Mike Tyson events. And just from the Mike Tyson-Michael Spinks fight alone, you know, I would have loved to have just promoted just that one event, and that would have been 10, 15 years worth of promotion for the average promoter. That's just how much money was generated,
wow.
you know, from that event. As a matter of fact, to my knowledge, that event alone, to this day, still, I think, stands as the most lucrative sporting event to ever take place in the history of New Jersey. That was in 1988, the Mike Tyson-Michael Spinks fight. The money that was generated, the casino drop, you know what they call the drop at the casinos, the gambling. It was, mm-hmm. I mean, it was fantastic. The fight took place on a Saturday night. I was in Atlantic City that entire week. People started coming to Atlantic City. Traffic jams from Wednesday to Saturday. I mean, there was not a room within 10, 15 miles of Atlantic City for that fight. The convention center was packed to the brim. And I mean, you know, the money that was generated from that single event. And Donald Trump was the prime mover of that event because all of the casino moguls in Las Vegas, they were bidding for that fight. And he was having fun, you know, just outbidding them. That's just how big this guy's ego is. And he ended up, you know, he ended up winning it. You know, if you check the records, most of Mike Tyson's major fights were held in Atlantic City under the auspices of Trump Plaza. Yes. He was Mike Tyson had a suite down at the Ocean Plaza, which is about three or four buildings down from the Trump Plaza. He had a makeshift, you know, they set up a training center there. And it was just fantastic, and
that was kind of a heyday that little, during that time period, right, Larry, Mr. Hazard, for boxing in Atlantic City, right?
Those are what I call the glory years. Those were the glory years of boxing in the state of New Jersey, the 1980s and 90s.
And Donald Trump was very instrumental in bringing that all to Atlantic City.
Donald Trump, you know, I've been asked this question many times, and putting aside any personal political feelings about him, because I'm not a Trump fan when it comes to politics. But, you know, like anything else, you have to give credit where it's due. You can't deny it. What he did for boxing, professional boxing, and the money that he gave and that he allowed some of these fighters to make during the 80s and 90s from those events that he underwrote in Atlantic City was just astronomical. You know, you cannot deny him that. You cannot deny it. Without Donald Trump, boxing in New Jersey would not have been what it was during those years. That's a fact.
You know, Larry, I had gone down there on two occasions with Gus, and I was amazed at the people coming in there, especially the big, fat men. Some had gone on television later. You know, after that, I was absolutely amazed because I had never been to a fight before. But it was quite an event. You know, it was incredible. You know, because you heard
if he could do for this country what he did for boxing, he'd be the greatest president ever. I'm telling you, maybe it's not such a great analogy, but that's just how great he was. You know, for our sport, for me.
Oh, you're right. In society, as a cultural or pop culture guy, I'm not mad at as a general rich person who makes his opinion until he started talking about the president's birth certificate. Before that, I wasn't really mad. I mean, you know, Donald Trump he was a rich guy, flashy personality. You know, sometimes could be a jerk, would throw his money around, sometimes could not. But that was part of the whole mystique of his character, right? Didn't really mind it. He was a part of culture, you know, pop culture. And so, you know, great. But when the guy wants to talk about start, you know, doing things that affect your lives, you're like, whoa,
yeah,
wait a minute.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
so.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel the same way, you know. I really, you know, my opinions of him started to kind of go in the other direction because I had a tremendous relationship with him. And my opinion just started turning a little bit when he started, you know, heading that Bertha situation with our president.
Right.
You know, that just started getting to be a little bit too much. You know,
at first
I said, well, maybe he's just going to throw that out there and leave it alone. That's just Donald. That's what I said, Donald, because we were on first-name basis. You know, I said, that's just Don doing that, you know. He's just throwing that out there politically, you know. But then he just kept on. He became the prime advocate of that, and that just turned me around from the guy, you know what I mean, in terms of politically, because I just felt that wasn't even necessary, you know.
Yeah, he made it personal then, you know.
Yeah, he made it very personal.
Really it showed a side of him that I guess a lot of people, you know, it's why you had, a surprising number of black people that were supporters of him. Obviously, celebrities, you know, Mike came out and supported him and Donald and Don King. So, but I mean, at that point, you know, it almost makes you want to say, I'm wondering if anybody said to him, like, hey, man, what's up with that? You know?
Yeah.
Like you said, you have to give credit where credit's due. And I think, obviously, being a businessman and being a businessman who's had a certain amount of success, you know, people who are a little less educated about the nuances of politics and running government, which is different than just having your own business where people do whatever you want, whatever you tell them to do. I think people are expecting, you know, a lot of people when they talk about or they have the image, in my opinion, have the image of hanging out or knowing somebody rich. They also have the impression of, like, the one question I always say in the back of my mind, what's the one question you want to hear your rich friend say? I'm rich, let me show you how to be rich too, you know, or I'm rich, let me make you rich too. And sometimes people think that things will rub off or just, you know, it's like why people are groupies, you know. I mean, you know, obviously seeing in the boxing world, sports world, and entertainment, Mr. Hazard, I'm sure, you know, you've seen ultimate groupies and people who are hanger-ons and just kind of that atmosphere that celebrity and wealth creates. And I think that a lot of people got caught up in the Donald Trump, the TV star, The Apprentice, because I was a big fan of The Apprentice. Like I said, I was kind of like middle-of-the-road guy with Donald Trump before the whole Bertha issue, before it seemed like he was being a little racial. So, people look at this guy and they say, well, he's been successful in this area, let him be president, and a lot of these people, combined with their racism, and the ones who aren't quite as educated, don't have the ability, that's what I was talking about at the top of the show, don't have the ability to discern that this man, yes, he's a good, astute businessman, yes, he's achieved these things, but he also has these drawbacks, which I think don't make it possible for him to be able to do this job.
That's very true.
The job of president. Yeah.
And that's very true. And the fact that, you know, a lot of times when somebody wants something bad enough, you know, they begin to resort to tactics that really, really is indicative of what's really in their heart, you know. And it's important to see what's in a man's heart, you know, as time goes on, to really realize what you're dealing with, you know. And what I've seen, some of the things that I've seen Donald Trump do during this campaign and some of the things that he said and some of the tactics that he's used to become president, you know, just to win, is an indication to me of what's really in his heart,
Exactly.
And it's not something that I like. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, and,
well, it makes you wonder,
Larry, could you separate yourself You know, as a public figure and politically, do you see yourself taking a stand with respect to that?
Well, any stands that I take from a political nature, you know, I look at things this way. As a public figure, I'm always conscious of the fact that I don't allow my position as a public figure to deny me my rights as a human being and as an American citizen. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
But I am cognizant of the fact that it's important for me to always make it clear that if I'm taking a particular position, especially if it's political, then it's very important for me as a political figure to make it clear that that position is Larry Hazard's position, and it represents Larry Hazard only, and not the position that he represents politically.
Yeah.
You know, as a public figure, you know. But what I try to do, you know, as a public figure, I try to pretty much stay, you know, in the background of politics as much as possible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, you know, some things can get you in trouble, you know, and you know, I don't want to be pushed into a corner where I have to choose at any given time, you know, because, you know, these situations can get very critical at points, you know.
Oh yeah.
So you have to be careful.
You got to be stealthy. What you're saying there, Mr. Hazard? Got to be.
Yeah.
Excuse me. You can't always predict your next move. So sometimes I know certainly with that makes me think about the Democratic Party. Too many times we're predicting our next move, and you had touched on the fact that a lot of people really didn't like Hillary Clinton. It's not so much that Donald Trump won, it's that the people voted against Hillary Clinton. Certainly the last things, the releasing of those emails, the FBI coming out, Director FBI coming out with some of the news that he did about a week before the election really did help too, but also a lot of her own baggage that they carried that caused people, a lot of those same people that didn't vote for her are a lot of the same people that really don't, aren't well educated and aren't able to separate fact from fiction, you know, and are very gullible or liable to listen to someone just because they're saying what they want to hear as opposed to what the truth is. So
oftentimes they respond to what they heard last.
Right, mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's what they said was the thing about Donald Trump, that some of his opinions formed or what the most recent information that he got. It's really interesting that I've always said that my opinion has been that a CEO, someone who's used to being a boss and telling people what to do, would have a really hard time being a public servant because you have to compromise with people, and people aren't going to do what you say that they should do just because, even just clearly, the way these guys treated President Obama, even if you're president, they're not going to say what you want them to do. So I think Donald Trump is going to find that.
And you know, Eric, it's even worse when you have a CEO or a businessman like Trump who really thinks that he knows more than anybody else.
Exactly.
In the world.
Because you understand?
Mm-hmm.
See, and that's the real danger. If you look at what's happening right now, before he has even taken office, he's already questioning, you know, the CIA, the intelligence, the people that he has to rely on, you know, the people who have their heartbeat on the pulse, you know, have their fingers on the pulse of the country and what's going on around the world. He's already giving the impression that he knows more than them. I mean, he came out, didn't he, say something during the campaign that he knew more than the generals?
Exactly.
He's a guy who never even served in the armed forces of this country, but yet he really thinks that he knows more than the generals. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, we, this is a really, we are confronted with a real serious situation here, you know. And you know, it's a dangerous, I see this as a dangerous situation because,
yeah,
I just
wanted to say real briefly, yeah, it is very, the real thing about that and the whole notion that this guy has, it goes back to what you're saying, his ego really thinking that he deserves, he could say whatever.
Yeah.
But the real sad thing about that or the eye-opening thing about that is that there are actually people that believe him when this guy has the nerve to say he knows more than the generals who's been spending their life pretty much most of all of their adult life being in the armed service and having expertise in warfare, military matters. That's the whole thing. Like you said, also in the intelligence guys. Those are guys that you probably might not want to mess with, Mr. President-elect, because that's what they do for a living is gather information and intelligence around the world. So like you said, Mr. Hazard, they're the guys on the ground that know, on the streets, that know what's going on. And
that's
just the
right.
fact that he's challenging, and that's why I was saying earlier, it's almost like he's an accomplice in a crime, and he's trying to cover up the tracks because he keeps trying to throw people off the track of Russia being involved with these hacks. You know,
yeah.
and it keeps just making me feel like classic movie stuff. You catch one of the bad guys, and he tries to cover for the other bad guys, and throws the police off the trail. And that's really what it sounds like, because you know all this investigation things and him not releasing his taxes. You know, there's going to be some connection, and it's just, who knows? It might not be any connection, but I'm just saying things look a little funny. I mean, his last campaign manager, who had a major business dealings in Russia, Donald Trump praising Putin. I mean, there's too many, you know, there's a lot of dots that are almost connected. There's so many dots that you almost don't have to connect. They're connecting themselves. It kind of, you know, makes me wonder. That's why I wonder about the common average intelligence of people who believe someone who says they know everything. That's what the main things in life.
Yeah.
You never believe anybody who says they know everything.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Well,
it's amazing. It's like an ongoing movie. You know, this guy who's very wealthy and who has control of the world, and he goes through life, you know, thinking that he is in control of the world, and eventually something happens. Now, what's going to happen? We don't know. But the point is, it's getting really, really very interesting and dangerous, I would say, because the fact that here he is, a very wealthy, probably the most wealthiest person in the world. I don't know. It could be. So who knows? But and because of this, you know, he thinks that he can do anything. And you know, there's a great possibility that he can. All he has to do is buy people. So, boy, it's really scary, though. It really is very uncomfortable.
I think that it does have the markings or the makings, if you look at it, kind of a, you know, you see it in movie script, the rich kind of Citizen Kane-ish type of guy, and he's not the richest man in the world, but he certainly, I believe, is the wealthiest president, wealthiest man ever be elected president. But it also, you know, he's hit all the points, you know. He's said these extreme things to appeal to the very far-right extreme of the party, which at one time he's quoted to have said, telling Mitt Romney, first you got to appeal to the crazies. And that's those Tea Party, those extremists who he referred to as the crazies. And that's textbook what he did with his campaign. Appealed to those individuals first, built on that, doesn't release his tax returns, plays the rich guy game, says appeals to the working class and says, I'm with you. But then all of his appointments have been all Wall Street people to his cabinet. So, and also the use of the newest thing, which is social media, which is the newest thing to come along within our culture that's been used to quite effectively by Barack Obama before him and now Donald Trump to galvanize his base, you know, his Trump army of, I don't want to say army of idiots. I almost said that. I don't think they're all idiots, but certainly there's a number of people who aren't as well educated. And then just the other ones.
Are people who want to make a lot of money, too.
Right, right. And yeah, there's a large part of his supporters that are wealthy. You know, they said, I heard of a study that said that the average income of a Trump supporter was really about $70,000. So that was the average annual income of the Trump voter. So it was flying in the face of him really being out there for the working people and all that. That was really saying what the average of his voter was. I forget the study what it was. I saw it on one of the, I believe MSNBC was the station, but someone was quoting a study for that. So, but it really is an interesting time. That also, too, one of the lasting stories I want to say before we get to side off is that he's having a lot of trouble getting people to perform at his inauguration, because a lot of the Hollywood people are a lot of stars happen to be Democrats and progressive people. So kind of when you're the conservative guy, it's kind of hard to get, you know, all the better entertainment people who have to kind of get along with the rest of the world. You know, they deal in a diverse world, so they kind of are turned off and start talking about other ethnic groups. But we want to say to Larry Hazard, we want to thank you, Mr. Hazard, for calling in and being a part of the show this week.
Okay. I enjoy it. It's always good
always
talking to you guys. It's always good. Yes.
How's your day? You again, Larry. We want you to come on again because, you know, you have information that we need and we'd like to hear, because you're right there in the midst and you know what's going on, you know, with that element. Let's just put it that way.
And how's
okay?
Mr. Payne? How's Mr. Payne doing?
The congressman's doing very well. He just got re-sworn in yesterday, as did the entire class of the new of the 114th Congress. So, you know, they're down there trying to hold the fort, the Democrats, as we saw today earlier on in the news, and trying to make sure that they keep the new president, in check. So,
I'm very proud of the congressman. You know, the congressman, several years back in the 70s, you know, he came, he needed some credits in summer school, and I was his summer school teacher.
Wow.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, he needed some credits. I think he had already graduated, or he was getting ready to graduate. He needed some credits so that he had everything set for his graduation. And so I was teaching physical education at the time in Newark. And his dad, I had talked to his dad, who was my ninth grade English teacher.
Right,
thing,
right.
You know, and the congressman, you know, was in my phys ed class, you know, and
Mr. Hazard, we're gonna have to, because we're getting ready to be cut off right now. But we gotta
come
back and talk about that story right there. All right?
Okay, all right. Okay, very good.
Boxing Commissioner Larry Hazard, thank you for coming on. We'll see you again. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Wayne Gilman.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Very interesting show so far. You know, I know it's coming to an end, but, you know, he had a lot to say, and I'm just, I guess all we can do is just stand by and just wait to see what happens.
Yeah.
Well, we will see. We will see. So we'll be back next week, Wayne. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday.
I'll be here.
Abbreviated version of the show, but we'll talk to you again. Legendary newsman Wayne Gilman. Thanks, Wayne.
Thanks,
Wayne. Thank you, Eric. Okay.
All right. And this has been the Kay Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. You can listen to us every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. live. Also, the show's archives. blogtalkradio.com/KayThompsonLive. My name is Eric Payne. I am usually called the son, and you are, lady.
I am the mother, Kay Thompson Payne. So join us every Wednesday.
Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you.